at least some recognition of Hungarian nationality. One sees the same thing in Bohemia, with an emphasis on the Czech language, with an emphasis on some form of autonomy for Bohemia within the Habsburg monarchy. But here, when it's very interesting, as the revolution progresses in Prague, not only does one see calls for a liberal constitution, for some sort of Bohemian autonomy within the Habsburg monarchy, but also a convening of a pan-Slav Congress. Here one sees not simply nationality, one's talking about a larger sort of ethnic, linguistic group, the implications of which were not obvious to anyone in 1848, but it already suggests the extent to which thinking along these lines had progressed. In Moravia, in Galicia, Transylvania, and Dalmatia, revolutionary outbreaks had occurred. Indeed, the entire Habsburg monarchy seemed to be in revolt. By the end of May 1848, the Habsburg monarchy seemed on the verge of disintegration. It didn't seem possible to hold it together at all. I think for those of us who have watched the disintegration of the former Soviet Union, where it seemed as if here a country, there a country, new demands for this republic, this ethnic group, this is exactly what one saw in 1848 in the Habsburg monarchy. There didn't seem to be any hope in the spring of 1848 that the pieces could be put back together for the monarchy. How would this turn out? How could the monarchy possibly survive? How could this Austrian Empire survive? In Germany itself, revolutions occurred in all of the major states, in Munich, in Dresden, Bavaria. In Bavaria, the Wittelsbach dynasty, a dynasty that had ruled in Bavaria for centuries, was driven from the throne. The king associated with 1848 is so filled with colorful characters. One's always tempted to digress and talk about them. But one of the most colorful was a woman named Lola Montez, who was an advisor, lover of the king of Bavaria. She was of Spanish and Irish extraction. Was a dancer, and she was the focal point of much of the student unrest and student liberal assault on the Wittelsbach monarchy in Bavaria. The Wittelsbachs were forced aside. Lola Montez was forced to flee. She wound up, this is in the spring of 1848, in 1849 she wound up in California in the midst of the gold rush, and I believe there is a state park named for Lola Montez in California. So she was, I think, a 19th century version of the unsinkable Molly Brown. In Saxony, revolution in Leipzig, in Dresden. In Dresden, in the course of 1848, two people would be beside one another on the barricades. It must have been an interesting scene indeed. One was the director of the opera house there, a man by the name of Richard Wagner, who would later go on to make something of a name for himself, fighting side by side with Mikhail Bakunin, the Russian revolutionary. Similar outbreaks in Baden. And, of course, in that most important of the German states, the largest of the German states, in Prussia. In March of 1848, and the Germans refer to the revolutions of 1848 as being the March days. This is the period of the greatest outbreak of successful revolution there. And indeed, the entire period from 1815 to 1848 in German is referred to as the Vormärz, that is the pre-March days. The revolution in Prussia had begun in its Rhenish provinces, close to France, of course, in Cologne, but very quickly spread to Berlin, where the king, Frederick William IV, promised to convene what he called a united diet, some sort of parliament. He lifted censorship. He hinted very broadly that he was willing to establish a constitution and that he was interested in a new role for Prussia in the German Confederation. What that meant was that he was willing now to listen to the idea of some sort of Prussian role in a move for German unification.